Arise, oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Joseph L. Toth presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. Counsel, can you hear me okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good. Okay. I'm Judge Toth, and I'm joined by Judge Falvey to my right and Judge Lauer to my left. We are convened today in a hybrid proceeding. Counsel are appearing virtually while the judges are, as you can see, physically present here in the courtroom. We're about to consider arguments in the matter of Robert V. Chisholm v. Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 22-7028. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please enter your appearance for the record.
Good morning, Your Honor. Jenna Zellmer for the appellant, Robert V. Chisholm. Joining me is Zachary Stoltz.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Clifton Prince, along with Amanda Radke for the Secretary.
Good morning. Okay, so I understand appellant's counsel would like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, great. And just one kind of housekeeping thing. If we're asking you questions, even if we run long, just take as much time as you need to answer our questions. If you hit your time otherwise, just ask for a quick minute extension or two, okay? If counsel are ready, we'll begin with appellant's counsel. Ms. Elmer, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The initial decision with respect to the case is the February 2020 rating decision that denied higher ratings for tinea pedis and right leg radiculopathy. Mr. Chisholm filed the November 2021 VA Form 8940 while that claim for higher ratings was still pending. The 8940 continuously pursued the 2020 rating decision because it meets the statutory and regulatory definition of a supplemental claim. So regardless of whether the 8940 was a supplemental claim, it was still part of the same case under 5904C1, and so this court should find Mr. Chisholm eligible for attorney's fees. The Secretary's position is that this 8940 could not qualify as a supplemental claim because it wasn't on a 20-0995. He's wrong. The 8940 is a form prescribed by the Secretary, and that is all that is required under the statute and VA's own regulations. 38 U.S.C. 5108, which governs supplemental claims, does not list a 20-0995. Neither do 38 CFR 3.1P, 3.155D, or 3.2501. The text
so,
and structure...
Counsel, let me ask you, so if you had to prevail on one of your arguments... Well, which one would you choose? Which one would you prefer to win on?
Your Honor, I think the second argument that it was all part of the same case is slightly easier. But I think that there is some inconsistency and uncertainty about the form's requirements. And so a decision from this court about the fact that an 8940 could qualify as a supplemental claim would lend a lot of clarity to the area of law.
But isn't that, I mean, aren't there also problems with characterizing this type of request as a supplemental claim? Because obviously by statute, you can request one of three choices, and those choices appear to be mutually exclusive. And so if it's deemed as, like, for instance, if someone has filed an NOD and let's say they're in the hearing lane, you could not technically file a TDIU claim if it were deemed a supplemental claim, right? It would be an action that would be prohibited because you've already filed an NOD. If you're in a hearing lane, I mean, that can last a long time. Technically, VA is sending it back to you saying, you know, we're not allowed to accept this. I mean, that seems problematic to me.
I think that it would depend on what the record was at the time of the NOD. I don't think that an increased rating claim for IU is a separate claim. I think that this court made that clear in Phillips that Rice still is applicable. And so if a veteran has filed an NOD and chosen the hearing lane and within an evidentiary window has raised entitlement to TDIU as part of the pending increased rating claim. I don't think there needs to be a discussion of whether the AD 940 is a supplemental claim, because under Rice and under Phillips,
but there is. I mean, if you look at 5104C, it's not a regulation; it's a statute. And so Congress has set very specific strictures on kind of how things proceed. Right now, we can go back and forth on whether it's jurisdictional or whether it's a kind of mandatory rule, and that's obviously a big difference. But it seems pretty clear to me that if someone's filed an NOD, they would not be allowed to file a supplemental claim. The VA would under the kind of rules set by Congress, would be not allowed to accept that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Am I misreading that? That seems to be the statute.
No, Your Honor. We agree that 5104C prohibits concurrent review. But I think that there's a difference between whether or not TDIU is part of a pending claim and whether or not there's a supplemental claim. In your scenario, Your Honor, I don't think that there needs to be a supplemental claim, because if TDIU was raised by the record, that's the end of the story under Rice. The issue here is when a veteran is filing concurrent review or a continuous pursuit of a pending claim and raises TDIU by virtue of filing an 8940, that 8940 within that context should be considered a supplemental claim. But I think that the difference here is that an 8940, and the Secretary concedes this, an 8940 isn't actually a supplemental claim form or an initial increased rating claim form. It's just an information gathering tool. And so because it's a prescribed form by the Secretary, and because the supplemental claim statute and regulations only require a prescribed form by the Secretary, it's VA's duty to look at the context of that submission. And this court recently reaffirmed VA's duty to liberally construe a veteran's submission beyond the corners of the form when it issued its decision in Edwards v. McDonough. So we know that even in the AMA, the Secretary can look at the corners of the form and decide what the veteran intended. It needs to look at the context of that form. And so in this case, because the context of the form was submitted within 1 year of a rating decision, that rating decision was dependent. And so the most liberal reading of the submission is to consider it a supplemental claim, which conforms with the statutory and regulatory requirements of a supplemental claim, which is a prescribed form by the Secretary.
But why not? I mean, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I understand that if the claim's final, then there's really not much, there's nothing problematic about giving it a supplemental claim, right? It would just be something like new and relevant evidence. As long as it's continuously pursued, you know, the effective date would go back, et cetera. But if the claim's pending, I mean, this is basically the third variation of the same question. If the claim's pending and we've got this mutually exclusive problem, why not deem it? Why couldn't this just be construed as something like a motion to reconsider the HLR, right? Like to have higher level review anew on different evidence, right? Because I don't see anything in the statute that would prohibit a person from seeking higher level review multiple. You can do things a couple times. You can submit new evidence for higher level review. Am I misreading this?
So a little bit, Your Honor. So you can't ask for higher level review of a higher level review decision. So going back to the facts here, there was the 2019 claim for an increased rating, the February 2020 decision that denied increased ratings, and Mr. Chisholm, on behalf of Mr. Sutton, filed a request for higher level review. We got that decision on the higher level review request in April 2021. And so at that stage, there were two options to continuously pursue the claim, either a supplemental claim or an appeal to the board. And our position is that 8940 that we submitted within a year of that rating decision qualifies as a supplemental claim. I also think, you know, as I mentioned, the text and structure of the statute and regulations all say a prescribed form, not the prescribed form by the Secretary. And I think that's what controls here. But going back to your previous question, Judge Choth, about, you know, which of these outcomes is more preferable, I do think that even if you disagree that the 8940 could constitute a supplemental claim, Percy Valley, the Federal Circuit's decision in Percy Valley controls here. The question of, for purposes of attorney's fees, is what is the initial decision with respect to the case? And whether something is or is not a supplemental claim does not control that definition. Instead, we know that the case encompasses all potential claims raised by the evidence, regardless of how they're characterized. And so the question here is, when we filed the 8940, were higher ratings for tinea pedis and right leg radiculopathy sufficiently evident in the record? I think the answer here has to be yes, because the initial decision with respect to the case, the 2020 decision, denied higher ratings for tinea pedis, and the April 2022 decision that awarded higher ratings also was for tinea pedis and for right leg radiculopathy. So there's really no question they're part of the same case. The higher ratings were evident in the record at the time of the previous decision.
Ms. Zellmer, obviously opposing counsel has a different view on the prescribed form issue. And my question for you is whether there is an analogy whereby the secretary has clearly laid out what a prescribed form would constitute in the case of, so an analogy to the supplemental claim form. Can you think of any other cases where the secretary has spelled out exactly what that means?
I think there might be something with the intent to file form, the 3.155D. And I think that kind of goes to this court's decision in Kreiner. The widow in Kreiner was trying to substitute for her deceased husband's claim, and she asserted that the veteran had filed an intent to file, which meant that the claim was still pending at the time of his death. The problem there is that the intent to file was, the alleged intent to file was just an informal letter submitted to the secretary. It wasn't on VA's prescribed form. I believe it's 20-0966. And so this court held that, you know, we can't extend the court's liberal construction of a submission past the point of standardization. So, like, there was no standard form in that case because it wasn't even submitted on a different VA form. And I think the difference here is that we submitted a VA form. It's just not the secretary's preferred form. And I also think that going back to the statute and the regulations, it's clear that the secretary was instituting a flexible standard when he didn't prescribe a specific 0995. He just said a prescribed form. And so here we filed a prescribed form. It was the 8940. And I also think it's important to sort of look at, you know, I don't think the M21 provisions, which is the only scenario in which the secretary identifies the 0995, I don't think those are enforceable for a number of reasons. But I do think it's interesting to look at the Paperwork Reduction Act notice, which we cited in our supplemental pleadings. So in the Paperwork Reduction Act notice, the secretary said he would require an 0995, but then none of the regulations actually bear that out. And then all subsequent notices also just say the form will be used by a claimant to formally request it, but it doesn't say the 0995 is the exclusive form. It's the only form that the veteran can file in order to continuously pursue his claim. And I think if you compare that to the language in the Paperwork Reduction Act notice for a notice of disagreement, which is at 87 Federal Register 4718, that notice specifically says appellate review may only be initiated by the filing of an NOD, and that 10182 is required to initiate the review. And so I think if you compare that notice with supplemental claim notice, you can see that the secretary knows how to describe a form in a way that it's exclusive, that it's jurisdictional to a certain extent. And I mean, I think, you know, the secretary also concedes that all of the claims forms are claims processing rules that are waivable. And so I think that sort of undermines that. But I do think that there's something there, that the supplemental claim form is not prescribed. It is not the exclusive form from the secretary for a supplemental claim.
What specifically about the requirements for the notice of disagreement under 20.202 would you point to for the court to consider?
I think so when you appeal to the board, you have three different dockets. You need to specifically identify whether or not you are limiting your appeal before you're appealing all of the issues that were denied in the AOJ's decision. I think that the supplemental claim form or the supplemental claim review option is a little bit more lenient. And I think the difference there is because you're still at the AOJ at the end of the day. If you file an HLR or you file a supplemental claim, at the end of the day, you're staying within the agency. Whereas if when you're filing an NOD, you're going to the board, you're going to a higher level of review. And as I mentioned, you know, that requires a little bit more. It requires a 101A2 that specifically lists which docket you're considering. But I also think going back to Edwards, we know that even then, the 89 or the 101A2, excuse me, you have to look beyond the four corners of the claims form. You have to look at what the context of the veteran submission. So in Edwards, the veteran filed 101A2 and checked the box for direct docket review, but then simultaneously submitted a number of different paperwork and evidence that you know, raised some uncertainty about what docket he was really choosing. Was he choosing the direct review docket, or was he choosing the evidence submission docket? And the court in Edwards specifically said, you can't just look at the four corners of the 101A2 and say that you're done. You have to look at the context in which it's submitted. And I think that is relevant here, because here the 8940 is not construed in a vacuum. It's construed in the context of all the things that were pending at the time that we filed the 8940.
Ms. Elmer, I'm going to ask you for a favor. Could you slow down just a little bit? Because
yes, I'm sorry.
You're loud enough here in the courtroom, but I'm having a little trouble hearing you. And I'm hoping that if you just slow down a little bit, I'll be able to hear you better or understand you better. I'm able to hear you fine, but it's kind of echoing a little bit and I'm having a little trouble hearing it.
Yes, Your Honor.
So let me ask you a question. So the TDIU application was granted, or at least in a sense it was granted. It was he was given a higher rating for,
yes, Your Honor,
right radiculopathy and tinea pedis, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
in April of 2022. But in doing so, the VA seems to have viewed, not seems to, they viewed it as a new claim, so they gave the effective date back to the date of the TDIU application. Yet, if it was, as you see it, a supplemental claim, the TD that was continuously pursued, it would go back to November 2019. Did you all appeal that effective date determination?
We did, Your Honor, and we actually, it's not in the record before of the proceedings because it happened after the board decision, but Mr. Sutton actually has TDIU now effective back to 2013.
Okay. Yeah, if you didn't, I was going to ask, well, why not? But thank you.
Yes, of course.
So, counsel, I want to. So, this is kind of following up on maybe my line of questioning and then Judge Lauer's as well. Tell me if I'm conceptualizing your two arguments correctly, right? So, the way I imagine the first argument, or the way I sort of see it, is the first argument basically says VA can waive. None of these rules are jurisdictional. So VA can waive whatever procedures and forms they have. You could write them something on a cocktail napkin, and you know they can reject it, or they can just adjudicate it and grant claims, and none of it's jurisdictional. So the point is, we need not necessarily characterize what exactly this was. The point is, VA granted it, and what matters is the claim was still pending. And the filing was something like evidence responsive to a denial that occurred before it, right? Am I conceptualizing that correct? The claim is non-final, and that's the most important thing.
Yes, Your Honor. I would just say one caveat to that is that we're not going so far as to saying that a veteran can file something on a cocktail napkin. I think since 2015, VA's standardized forms have been
no, of course. But the point is, you know, their case law says he's not jurisdictional, right? So they have and will reject that. But, you know, in the event that they wanted to adjudicate that, if they want to grant benefits on some non-conforming claim, they're free to do so, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So your first argument doesn't necessarily require us to kind of figure out what exactly this claim was. It's just we have a grant and it's pending and it's responsive. Or maybe here, let me give you an analogy and tell me if this holds, right? Let's say this were a PTSD claim, and you know, he had filed an increased rating for PTSD, and then it goes through the same exact procedural history, higher level review, denied, and then within the time to file the 1 year, you file the stressor statement on a similar form, right? Mm-hmm. And then VA decides, to, you know, post higher level review, somebody looks at it and they say, okay, got it, this works, and they grant the claim. How would we have to characterize, would we have to kind of go through and parse out what exactly the stressor statement was to recognize that, you know, the person's entitled to attorney fees on this, that's part of the same case?
I think yes, Your Honor, because 5904 lays out the different options to continuously pursue a pending claim, and there are three options. And so there needs to be in your hypothetical.
To me, you're making your case a lot more difficult. I mean, if 5104 is non-jurisdictional, meaning they can and will reject everything, and that's perfectly within these. But we're post-grant here. So let's just say the thing was on a cocktail napkin and they granted it. That's all that matters, is they made it through the gate and they got the benefit sought. And I don't see why we would need to make this more difficult by having us sort of pin down what exactly TDIU is.
You don't. I think that, you know, we could resolve this case under Persia Valley. I think we can say the claim was pending, to your point, and within a year, while that claim was pending, there was a new claim that was filed, and it relates back to the same case. And that's very clear under Persia Valley. And I see that I'm out of time, but may I answer your question?
Yeah, please.
So I think if we want to make everyone's job easier today, then yeah, we don't need to get into whether or not the 8940 was a supplemental claim or not, because the secretary doesn't dispute that at the time the 8940 was filed, the April 2021 rating decision was still pending. And so we can say that it's all part of the same case, regardless of whether it's a supplemental claim or a new increased rating claim. I do think, you know, there is some uncertainty, as I mentioned in the beginning. The secretary is sort of all over the place in terms of how they accept forms and when they accept forms and when they reject forms. And so having a decision that says a supplemental claim can be filed on a prescribed form would be beneficial, not just to this case, but to claimants as a whole. But again, you don't have to reach that question.
Okay, thanks. So, Shelby, no more questions? Thank you.
No, thank you.
Okay. Thanks, counsel.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. The court should dismiss the appellant's appeal of the November 2022 board's decision because there's no live case or controversy over which the court should exercise jurisdiction. And the motion to dismiss, we just have one point, and that is because payment was made, the case is ultimately moot and the court should dismiss. However, if the court finds that it has jurisdiction over this appeal, the court should affirm the board's decision and find that the appellant is not eligible for attorney's fees based on class two benefits awarded by the April 2022 rating decision. And that is because there was no request for review of the April 2021 higher level review decision. And a request for review is necessary under 5904 to establish entitlement to fees. Ultimately, the April 2022 rating decision was an initial decision on an initial claim, which was the November 2021 TDIU application form. There was no indication in the TDIU application form that the veteran sought review of any prior determination or that the veteran sought to continue any previously, seek review of any prior decision or sought to establish or continues to pursue any prior claim. Instead, the veteran filed his TDIU application and made a tactical choice based on perhaps his counsel, made a tactical choice to pursue increased evaluation based on individual unemployability as opposed to an increased evaluation based on any of the underlying conditions. However, under the pro-veteran system, the secretary adjudicated increased rating claims for each of the underlying conditions that were discussed in the TDIU form, and there was no specific request for review of any of the previous denials.
Am I understanding what you just said correctly, in that so a supplemental claim has three basic kind of elements, right? You have to have a previously filed claim and has to be for the same or similar benefit and has to be for the same or similar basis, right? And what you said before, I mean, is this a different basis, right? Is the fact that, you know, an increased rating claim would be on the grounds that you believe that you satisfy all the, you know, the highest ratings criteria for, you know, 100%, whatever that is. Whereas a TDIU says that you're entitled to the 100% rating on a different basis because you've lost your job because of your disability. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. A TDIU claim is an assertion that you're unemployable or deserve an increased rating or the highest rating based on your individual unemployability. However, the prior increased rating claims that were denied by the higher level review decision were based on establishing the elements that were listed in the diagnostic code for each disability that was denied. In the situation of the November 2021 TDIU application form, the veteran, again, as you said, alleged that he was unemployable due to service-connected disabilities as opposed to seek an increased rating based on the individual elements. And so there was a different basis, Your Honor.
But TDIU is just a different theory for an increased rating. You seem to be making a distinction here that I'm not sure I'm tracking.
The distinction, Your Honor, between an increased rating based on, again, the diagnostic code would be different than an increased rating based on unemployability. However, in these situations... Sorry, Your Honor.
The different theories that are going to get me an increased rating, but why does that preclude a TDI, an increased rating resulting from TDIU consideration? What prevents that from being achieved through a supplemental claim?
A TDIU determination would not necessarily, you can pursue a supplemental claim, TDIU through a supplemental claim, Your Honor. However,
okay.
in this situation, there was no indication that the supplemental claim, there are two different types of supplemental claims, Your Honor. One would be one filed within a year, which seeks a review of a prior determination. Another would be one filed after a year, which seeks to provide new and relevant evidence supportive of a prior decision or prior denial. In this situation, we have a TDIU claim or TDIU form, application form, that was an initial increased rating claim following the April 2021 higher level review decision. There's no indication that there was a request for review. So with this situation, Your Honor, we have a different case presented based on a new claim that is not a continuation or a continuous pursuit of any prior denial. So with regard to whether the basis is different.
What's the new claim? The TDIU application is not a claim.
The new claim form.
Sorry,
Your Honor. What's the new claim?
Yeah.
The new claim would be a claim for an increased evaluation based on individual unemployability. If a veteran filed, for example, an increased rating claim that was denied in this situation, as it was in this situation, the initial claim or date of claim would be the new form, the increased rating that was sought. So, for example, a veteran can seek an increased rating based on worsening of condition. That would not necessarily be a continuation of a prior determination or a prior denial. that the aspect of the actual filing of the claim is different than whether it was continuous pursuit of a previously denied claim. That explains, Your Honor. So with regard to whether there was a filing, the November 2021 filing, that filing initiated a new claim stream, which was decided by the April 2022 rating decision. Ultimately, there was no indication that the veteran or the appellant, veteran through the appellant, sought review of the April 2021 higher level review decision. And because there was an initial decision, the April 2022 decision was an initial decision, there was no prior initial decision, and therefore fees were not warranted under 5904C.
Mr. Prince, can I run a hypothetical by you? Let's say for the sake of the hypothetical that the November 2021 submission that Mr. Sutton made included, in addition to the TDIU application, a supplemental claim form, that being the 20-0995, and just said, see details in the TDIU application. Would there be any dispute as to whether or not the Mr. Sutton was continuously pursuing his increased rating claims? In other words, is this just a matter of if the supplemental claim form had been included in the same package, the same submission, that the secretary, the agency would view this differently?
Yes, Your Honor. If there was a supplemental claim form, the 20-0995, filed along with the TDIU application and the arguments included in the TDIU application, then yes, Your Honor, there would be no dispute. The secretary
is that
would have
based, is that based on the position that the prescribed form is only the supplemental form? And if so, where is that understanding documented?
Yes, Your Honor. It is based on the position that the prescribed form is the 20-0995. That position is documented in the Federal Register, which appellant's counsel explained. The Federal Register specifically notes that the 20-995 would be necessary to initiate a supplemental claim. The supplemental claim form itself notes that it's required the regulation 3.155D1 sub 1 notes that a supplemental claim form prescribed by the secretary is required to initiate a supplemental claim, and other statutory authority being 501A2, 5101A, all require or all explain that the secretary submitted prescribed forms. Here we have a prescribed form. Also, the veteran was notified, the veteran and the appellant were notified of the supplemental claim form requirement to initiate a supplemental claim. And that's part of the November 2021 notification letter that went along with the April 2021 higher level review decision. So we have general notice to the public through the Federal Register. We have notice through regulation, and we have notice, specific notice to the veteran that the supplemental claim form was required to submit a supplemental claim. So, yes, our position is based on the actual prescription of the form, and simply if the form was filed, which it later was in November 2022, a supplemental claim process was initiated. Again, the outcome of that supplemental claim was post this board's decision, so I'm not completely aware of the circumstances that surrounded it. But yes, if the form was filed, then that would be the end of this dispute. And here, again, we do not have a supplemental claim form that was filed. We don't have any indication in the TDIU application that the veteran sought review of any prior determination. And we have a later supplemental claim form filed indicating that the veteran understood the process, however, made a tactical choice, as in Gumpenberger, to seek a higher evaluation based on the filing of a TDIU claim, as opposed to a request for review of any prior determination.
Mr. Prince, the you said that the appellant knew how to file a supplemental claim, but the VA also knows how to require that something be on a prescribed form and indicate that no other form, no other means of doing this will be accepted. They do that with NODs. So why shouldn't we hold you to that burden that you want us to hold the appellant to? You know how to do this. Why didn't you do it?
In this case, Your Honor, our position would be that we did explain, and that's through the Federal Register. Also,
well, that, is that the Federal Register entry that is a compliance with the Paperwork Reduction Act?
Correct, Your Honor.
So that's where VA made it known we will accept no other forms than this particular form.
Yes, Your Honor. It's at 84 Federal Register, page 138, pin site to 163. It says that a supplemental claim form is required. 29-20995 is required to file to initiate a supplemental claim process.
Does it say is required, or does it say would be required?
I'll have to check that, Your Honor. Court's indulgence, please.
I don't have it in front of me. That's why I'm asking.
Okay. Yeah. I would need a moment on that, Your Honor, but. If I'm not mistaken,
that's all right. I can look it up.
It says that it is required to initiate the process. However, in this situation, we also have a regulation that provides that a supplemental claim form prescribed by the secretary is required. Additional federal register notices provided that the supplemental claim form is a 20-0995. We also have specific notification to the veteran in the Notice of Appellate Rights, along with the November 2021 notification from the April 2021 Higher Level Review Decision that 29-95 is required to initiate a supplemental claim. So we have specific notice that that the form is required. It wasn't a question of regulation providing that 29-95 is required, but we do have notice that was provided to the veteran through multiple means. And again, in this situation, we know that the veteran was later aware, or at least aware, notified. There was no additional notification after receipt of the November 2021 TDIU application that would indicate that a supplemental claim was filed, or a supplemental claim should have later been filed. There is no indication that the veteran sought review of the April 2021 higher level review decision until he filed the supplemental claim in November 2021.
But there's also no evidence that the veteran filed a claim for a new form, right? I mean, that presumably would also be for, you know, an initial increased rating claim. That would also be required as well, right?
Well, the indication that the veterans filing the TDIU application form was the initial indication that he sought a higher rating. Again, there's no indication
The thing is, we have to, you know, obviously the TDIU form itself, we've got to kind of characterize after the fact what exactly this is. Either it's a sort of initial, another filing for a increased rating, or it's a supplemental claim, or it's, you know, platypus, who knows? But let me pivot. I want to ask you a question. So a kind of how-to question. So imagine this happens not infrequently where you'll have a veteran who's service-connected, you know, the claim is long since gone final, and then they lose their job due to their service-connected disability, and they just submit the TDIU form. How does that VA normally treat that? Like, what would be the maybe in practice, and then what should VA do exactly in that situation?
VA should adjudicate a claim of entitlement to TDIU at that point.
So you're saying TDIU can serve as a standalone form to request as a standalone form for a new claim for an increased rating, an initial claim for an increased rating, but it cannot serve as a supplemental claim form. Is that what you're arguing? I feel like I'm misunderstanding this.
Not in whole, Your Honor, in part. So again, a supplemental claim could be two things. It can be a request for review of a prior denial, or it can be an argument for an additional benefit based on new and relevant evidence. So can it be both? A supplemental claim, it could be both, Your Honor. Assuming yes, it could be both, Your Honor.
If there was ambiguity in this case, wouldn't we need to look at the context, which was the submission and the letter, which specifically said that the TDIU application and request for the TDIU is, quote, not a new claim for benefits, but rather part of the veteran's increased rating claim on appeal? I mean, doesn't that resolve any ambiguity here?
Yes, Your Honor, it does resolve the ambiguity, but there's no claim that Tiana Pettis and the right lower extremity radiculopathy claims were not on appeal as of the time of the filing. The only claims that
They're listed in Block 26, I believe it is, of the actual application.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I'm looking at record at 2707.
Yes, Your Honor, they are listed. And again, the quote that you just read in terms of TDIU being part of a claim on appeal, the only claims that were on appeal at the time, Your Honor, were a lumbar spine condition and a left knee condition. There were no, the Tiana Pettis, the radiculopathy claims, those claims were not on appeal.
It was within a year of the HLR denial.
Yes, Your Honor.
What's wrong with the appellant? The goal here is I want to maximize my benefits, and that's the VA's goal too. Maximize the benefits. He puts in for a higher rating, loses that, gets a rating decision that doesn't give him it, seeks higher level review, loses that, and then says, "Well, in my continuous goal to maximize my benefits, I'm going to say I want TDIU for these very same disabilities, radiculopathy and tinea pedis." How is that not a supplemental claim? You know, setting aside it's not on the right form, how is that not? I'm challenging the denial of my increased rating, and I'm seeking a new theory.
Your Honor, there's no indication that he was challenging the denial of the increased rating. The indication is that he sought a higher rating. There, with regard to a supplemental claim filed within 1 year, there's an indication that the veteran is seeking review of a prior determination or adjudication. With regard to filing of the TDIU claim, the veteran is seeking a higher rating based on individual unemployability. There's no indication that he sought to continuously pursue or otherwise challenge the prior adjudication. So then you have, and again, this is our position, is that this was a tactical choice. So for example, the veteran could have received a TDIU rating or filed an initial claim, an initial increased rating claim, received a 1 year look back, and potentially that could have afforded him an effective date potentially earlier than what he may have been entitled to under just reviewing the individual underlying service-connected disability claims. So we only have an indication of what the veteran desires through primarily through the form submitted, but also the language of the form, the specific TDIU application form, indicates that the veteran sought to add his TDIU claim as part of his underlying left knee claims and lumbar spine claims. Because there were no Tiana Pettis or right lower extremity radiculopathy claims on appeal at the time of the filing. So regardless of whether we look at the beyond the four corners of the document or whether we look at the actual document that was filed, there is no indication that the veteran sought to continuously pursue any previous denial or challenge any previous denial or the same basis. Instead, it appeared that the veteran filed a new initial increased rating claim based on his desire to seek a higher rating based on his individual unavailability. Because again, maybe he was unable to establish increased ratings based on the evidence of record meeting the diagnostic codes for each of the underlying conditions. So our position at this time is again that the November 2022 TDIU application was not a supplemental claim, but instead an initial claim for benefits, which my understanding was later granted. And the veteran later filed a supplemental claim on a supplemental claim form prescribed by the secretary and sought review of the April 2021 higher level review decision. That, Your Honor, would have afforded the appellant fees based on passive benefits because it involved review of a prior determination and therefore it would not have been an initial decision. However, here, the April 2022 rating decision was an initial decision, an initial claim, and therefore attorney's fees were not allowable under statute. And if there are no additional questions, I'll conclude, Your Honors.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you. And so for those reasons, because the November 2021 TDIU application was an initial claim, our position is that attorney's fees are not allowable because there was no supplemental claim filed on a form prescribed by the Secretary. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Elmer.
Thank you, Your Honors. The April 2021 rating decision was still pending at the time we filed the 8940. The 8940 specifically stated that it was part and parcel with the increased rating that was pending. That was the tinea pedis claim that had been pending since November 2019, tinea pedis and right leg radiculopathy. The 8940 also specifically said that the veteran service-connected conditions had prevented substantially gainful employment since 2014. So he was not asking for an increased rating based on change in circumstances. He was continuously pursuing the 2019 claim. Because the claim was still pending at the time that we filed the 8940, the 8940 is part of the same case, regardless of whether or not it's a supplemental claim. And the Secretary seems to concede that the 8940 can, in some instances, be a request for review. So if the court does choose to go that route, it should hold that the 8940 in this case was a supplemental claim.
I have a how-to question, and it's fine if you don't know the answer. But what happens if you, as representing a veteran, their post, let's say, an HLR denial, if you submit evidence, right? You get a vocational statement, or you get something that you the veteran tells you something, and you're like, oh, that should be included. Do they and so you submit it during this kind of interim period before you've chosen your three lanes? Do they just add it to the file? Does a line adjudicator take a look at it? Like what happens in practice?
I think it depends, Your Honor. I think it depends on the individual adjudicator and what they choose to do. I have seen situations in which they might send a letter to the veteran saying it looks like you're trying to file a claim, please file it on a specific claim form. Sometimes they won't do anything with it. We've seen board decisions that say, evidence was submitted in a time that the evidentiary window was not open. We're not going to look at it. But if the veteran wants to have us review it in the future, you can submit a supplement.
So, what you're saying is you've experienced, because those are two different ways of VA basically kind of invoking the claims processing rule, saying that, there's rules for how we proceed this doesn't seem to be in compliance with that. So either fill a new form or they just kind of do nothing, right? Okay, so I cut you off there. I mean, are there other things that you've seen that are relevant about that?
Yes, I think so. Excuse me, I don't think I know. We have seen situations in which a veteran files an intent to file on the specific claim form. The claim form specifically says file a 526, and so the veteran files a 526, but it's for a claim that was previously already denied, and so VA comes back and says, you shouldn't file a 526, you should file a supplemental claim. We've also seen situations in which a veteran has Parkinson's manifestations, but no Parkinson's diagnosis, and so VA adjudicates those individual manifestations, and then later on, as that appeal is pending, the veteran receives a diagnosis and attempts to file a supplemental claim because the diagnosis of Parkinson's is new and relevant evidence. And VA says, well, you've never filed a claim for Parkinson's before, so you need to file that on a 526. And so it seems like VA doesn't really know how to adjudicate their own claims forms requirements. And that's undermining the VA of the AMA, to streamline the system and be more efficient. If VA knows what the veteran wants, it shouldn't be rejecting forms because they're not the right form. If it's on a VA prescribing, it should be accepted. And to your earlier point, I believe Judge Lauer, you mentioned they need to be looking at the context of the form in which it's submitted. So we'd like this court to hold that the initial decision with respect to the case was the February 2020 rating decision that denied higher ratings for tinea pedis and for right lateral radiculopathy. And because the court favorably found that Mr. Chisholm met the requirements, the remainder of the regulatory requirements for attorney's fees, we would ask the court to reverse the board's denial of eligibility. Alternatively, if the court disagrees that the reversal is warranted, we would ask for a remand for the board to properly apply the correct standard for what a case encompasses and what the initial decision with respect to the case is.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you to both counsel. This case is submitted, taken under advisement. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.